Greetings to you, friends. It's me, Duncan. This is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. I just found out about my friend's Chinese spy balloon. Really sad. He spent so long building that thing. If you knew how long, if you think it takes a long time to fill up a raft at the pool or to put air in your air mattress, do you know how long it took him to blow up his spy balloon? Did you see the thing? Hours and hours of just blowing air into this stupid tiny plastic nozzle on the side of it. The mission itself was definitely something that probably the upper echelons of our government wouldn't be happy about, gathering intel, taking all kinds of measurements, spraying a mist of sodium pentothal nanobots down on North America. I don't want to get into politics because I don't understand politics. I'm just a podcaster, but I will tell you this. Lee Wong is brokenhearted, and I don't know if he's coming back from this. I went to school with him for a little bit. He stayed in the United States during the fourth grade, and we became friends, and he's a really cool guy. Then he had to go back to his home country, and, you know, we would correspond. He would send me letters. I can't read Chinese, but I definitely know what a spy balloon looks like, and even then he was drawing pictures of it, only for it to be shot down. Shot down with missiles paid for by taxpayers like you and me, and it's a kind of a sad thing to think. When I saw that thing deflate and spiral down into the sea, I just started sobbing, knowing the pain that Lee was going through. I guess what my grandmother used to say about life being a Chinese spy balloon turns out to be the case. Even if you spend your whole life inflating a massive balloon to check out what's going on in another country, there's no guarantee it's not going to get shot down. This is why we've got to live for the moment. If you're one of the many weapons manufacturers who are just in it for that explosion, if you're one of those spy drone creators that's just in it for the data you're going to gather, if you're building weapons of mass destruction just for that white flash at the end, then I think you're off track. I think you've missed the point. And the point is that it's not about the explosion. It's not about the data. It's not about the release of a new bioweapon. It's about the journey. If you're not enjoying soldering microchips into your deadly bird drone bomb, then maybe you belong in another career. Because an explosion only lasts a second. Is that what you want your life to be? Just a few explosions resulting from your creations? Or do you want your life to be fulfilling and wonderful even when those drones get shot down? Even when your Chinese spy balloon goes down in flames? Daniele Bolelli is with us today, friends. We're going to jump right into that. But first, the usual announcements. Won't you subscribe to my Patreon? It's patreon.com/DTFH. And I would love it if you would come and see me do some stand-up comedy. I have got so many dates coming up. It's crazy. Irvine Improv, February 23rd. San Jose Improv, 25th. 26. I'm going to be in Vegas at Wise Guys Comedy Club. I'm going to be at the Improv in Kansas City, March 24th. Raleigh, April 27th. There's so many dates. You can find them all at DuncanTrussell.com. But those are the imminent ones. Now, if you love today's guest, I hope you'll check out his podcast, History on Fire. He used to have it behind a paywall, but now it is out there for anyone who wants to listen. Daniele Bolelli is brilliant. He's an author. He's a philosopher. And he's one of my best friends. So strap in, everybody. And welcome back to the DTFH, Daniele Bolelli. Welcome, welcome all of you, that you are with us. Mr. Bilelli, welcome back to the DTFH. How goes it?
Goes very well. I'm enjoying my life in Ojai, California, in sunny Ojai, where, well, sunny to a point. The other, like, 3 weeks ago, there was, like, the biggest flooding out here that there had been in forever. I spent 6 hours with bucket shoveling. We probably threw out in the street 1,000 gallons of water that was pouring in my garage. So, yeah, that was fun. But other than that, I'm enjoying life in sunny California.
Oh, yeah, baby. We just had a nice ice storm. Lost power for 4 days, I think. 4 days out here in Texas. Yeah, and that was pretty good compared to our neighbors. You know, some people lost power even longer. They're not equipped. They don't know how to deal with it. So people get fucked out here, and they get pissed. Yeah. Even though when you think about that kind of anger in relation to things that you know happen in a place you're at, it's still, I think part of the anger is underneath it all, you know it's your fault. Like, you know you didn't take the precautions in advance to prepare for the inevitability of the thing that has happened more than a few times out here. At least that's, you know, that's how I felt. I remember my wife and I having like the generator conversation. I'm like, we don't need that. We don't need a fucking generator. Yeah, we'll be fine. And then poof, power gone. No generator. You fucked up. They're expensive though.
They are. That's, I think, is the problem for some people, where they are like, they move somewhere, they know there are problems, but it's not exactly that they can afford to fix them.
Right. And this is what's interesting. It's like, this is like, you look back at like early America and you look back at the whole like way we got to where we're at now. It was just by people who were like, no one's going to help me. I've got to figure out a way to grow food. I got to figure out a way to get lumber. I got to figure out a way to trade. And then that was how it started. Now we're all just like, I don't know how to do anything. Please help me. Someone come and get the power on, please.
And I think there's a double thing to that. Because on one end is individuals, right? On an individual level, people do that because they like to whine, because they are soft, because whatever. On the other side, there's something that's systemic, where if society has made it so stripping, the way society has evolved is basically strip layers of self-reliance one after another from people. Kind of hard to blame somebody who's born after 22 layers of self-reliance have been stripped and say, well, you should be self-reliant. It's like, well, it's kind of a
different world. I don't blame anyone but me. I don't know why you didn't do the thing. I'm sure you have a lot of good reasons. I know why I didn't do the fucking thing. Right. I didn't do the fucking thing because I'm lazy. That's why I didn't do the, because like, it's not like I'm not aware of the fragility of the power grid and civilization as it is right now. I hang out on those message boards. I know what's going on. But when it comes down to the act itself of like, okay, I'm going to disengage from the illusion that is allowing me to like have this like false sense of security in a very unstable system and begin to engage with reality, which is like, come on, look at everything. Yeah. Come on. You know, this isn't going to work out long term, right? You got kids. Come on. You got to get some shit together, man. You got to get your stuff together. You got to get ready. You know, I think maybe people don't want to do that because it's scary to admit the fragility of things.
And I mean, and the reality is that for each thing that you fix, that you cover your ass where you feel safe, there are about 300 more where you don't. So there's a level where people feel like, what's the point? I'm all what's in the hands of fate anyway. There's no way to, because again, it's not like you are 400 years ago where you could realistically be fully self-reliant. You are in a society in which it's not even that we got used to certain things, but there's that. But also there's the aspect of, even if you were to go back right now to live a certain way, you probably couldn't, because half of the water you get is polluted, because, you know, all sort of stuff that civilization
water filter.
Yeah, well, but that's what I'm saying. Like, you have to do it on levels where you do need to rely on kind of civilization at large, or shop on Amazon, get this thing, you know, not like you're going to make your,
dude,
that kind of stuff. But
in a paranoid state a long time ago, yeah. I ordered these bug out backpacks, which are like supposed to have inside of them all this shit that you will need if you got to get out quick. And so the power goes out and I got those backpacks and I open them up. And sure as shit, there's some stuff we need, man. There's a water purifier, but not, we bought shit tons of water because we knew the ice storm was coming. Yeah. Flashlights, lanterns, hand warmer, all this stuff. And it felt so good. But then I like open up the flashlights. These motherfuckers didn't include batteries. How dare you? How dare you, motherfucker? Fuckers, survival backpack. Here's your flashlights. Good luck. You might have to loot a grocery store for your batteries, but you got the flashlight. You know, that was annoying.
My poor Italian comprehension. I was picturing you digging through your backpack for a flashlight, as in FLESH.
Why not?
I was like, hey. The apocalypse is taking place, but at least you have a great masturbatory device to take care of you.
Hey, that's a different kind of survival backpack. That's the survival backpack for when you're married. Now, and you're horny. yeah, man. Right now what's happening is so cool because it's you have this like incredible convergence of like the most insane technology ever is a, you know, people are becoming increasingly aware of what's happening with ChatGPT AI, how it's now it's really directly impacting society. And then simultaneously you have like this earthquake that just happened in Turkey, 2.7 earthquakes in a row within like a few hours of each other. It looks like a nuclear bomb went off there. You've got that Chinese spy balloon. Nobody knows what's in it. You know, is that an EMP? What the fuck is that? So you have this like simultaneous eruption of potentially civilization warping, restructuring technology, and these events that are happening all over the planet that sort of shine a light on the reality of like, yeah, but so what? How are you going to talk to your fucking AI chatbot when the power grid's down? You know, so you have these two things that are just happening simultaneously is awesome and fun and scary, but so cool.
Well, on that note, since you bring it up, I would love to pick your brain about it and hear your opinion on AI and chat and all of that. Because, I don't know, I don't want to be the one who's like, if God meant for us to fly, he would have given us wings kind of guy. But there's something about AI that's freaking me out. And here is
really?
Because you tend to be much more optimistic than I am on some of these things. So that's why I'm like prefacing it with, because, you know, maybe you have a much different take on it that's more upbeat and optimistic. I'm feeling like there's a place with AI where, I mean, it's not there now, but it will be there in not so long, where AI will be essentially be able to do anything human beings can do better than human beings, or at least on the same level, but at record speed.
Yeah.
And so once that happens, human beings essentially become obsolete. There's nothing, you know, why the fuck would you spend all your time studying your guitar to be a great guitar player when you can press a button and get AI to deliver infinite songs to you however you want? And I feel like humans have survived all sort of shit. We have survived plagues and world wars and this and that and the other. But I feel that what AI brings to the table is loss of meaning. And I don't think human beings are very well equipped to survive loss of meaning. It's like, you know, the standard scenario that people picture of the AI apocalypse is the Terminator scenario, where the AI decide, fuck you humans, you're dumb anyway, let's kill you. I don't even think he needs to get to that. I think he's like, Terminator doesn't come to kill us, doesn't need to at least, because we'll do it ourselves if we just feel like there's no point to anything, essentially, since everything is done by, like, there's no drive for self-perfection, there's no drive to work on anything. And that's, you know, is one thing if AI is removing drudgery from work, that's fantastic, but that's not it. This is removing everything. Like,
okay, what's the emperor? Tell me, Daniele, what's that famous quote from the emperor who, like, thought he'd taken over the world and started crying? What's that quote? Do you know what I'm talking about? Some emperor, like some Roman emperor, has finally, like, expanded to the point where, as far as he could tell, there's nothing else to conquer, and he just starts crying because he's like, "Now what do I? Now I got to deal with my mind, baby. Fuck! What am I going to distract myself with now that I don't have the constant, never-ending cognitive load of and all the pressure and all the adrenaline that must go into being an emperor who's taking over the world? Now what? Now what?" And so I think that's what you're pointing to, is like the idea wasn't that we perpetually work. The idea wasn't that we're always constantly busily trying to, like, make money, right? Like, the utopian ideal is more like we get to be human. We get to, we make stuff for just because we want to make stuff, and we hang out together, and we're no longer completely encumbered by the temporal ball and chain of whatever our particular job or career may be. But then that became who we are. We are what our work, our job, our how we sustain ourselves. That of course, that became the defining characteristic of the individual. So when that is removed, well, now what are you? Now what are you? Your job? Yeah, that thing you've spent your $200,000 in debt to some university for learning, training how to do that fucking thing? Yeah, we don't need you anymore. Oh, man. Now what? What are you going to do? You know, as far as the artistic expression and stuff, I disagree with you. I think that, like, regardless of an AI's capacity to generate music, there's still, like, a implicit joy in sitting down with a guitar, learning how to play guitar, play piano, all that stuff. But, you know, if your idea is to, like, learn guitar, learn piano because you want to become a studio musician and make music for that you can make money with, well, no, you're in the same place as any other worker who, like, wants to, you know, make work in a factory or get some industrial job or do any of the any number of things the incoming wave of android robots and drones and whatever are going to be able to do.
But even if you are doing it purely for the pleasure of it all, if it takes you years to start sounding vaguely like a 2023 form of AI, and in the meantime you're in 2040 where it can do all sorts of shit, is, like, is it really that fun to just suck at something forever before you get it? It's like, and, you know, I don't know.
I think there's something for,
I don't know, maybe. It's
whenever I'm, like, I'm always trying to learn to play piano, and the reason I'm doing that, and I suck so fucking hard at piano, it's pathetic. Or, like, video games. I mean, like, I will be so proud of myself after, like, you know, beating some boss in a hard-ass video game. Then, and I'll think, God, I've gotten good at this. And then I'll watch these fucking kids
who are,
it's just like nothing to them. It's nothing to them. Right. So, but the fact that some little shit is better than me at Dark Souls does not take away my own sense of, like, hell yeah, I finally beat that fucking thing after 70 grueling fights. Oh God, I've learned scales. Yeah, does any motivated fourth grader who had a piano teacher play piano better than me? 100% yes. That still doesn't take away my own personal satisfaction at, you know, clambering my
sure
ass over the learning curve.
But there is stuff that you do that is not just, oh, an hour here and there for the fuck of it, but you do because you are passionate about. Like, if you have a Duncan Trussell Family Hour AI completed with lesbian rasp and everything else that goes with it.
Yeah.
And it can crank out an episode a second with based on your voice, your inflection, the kind of topics you're into and stuff. I don't know. To me, it kind of robs for the real thing, the one that you do yourself. Because at that point, it's like where you can't even distinguish what's... And I don't mean just for money. I don't mean just, okay, it becomes so inflated that you can't make my living on it. But also in terms of creativity.
Okay.
I don't know.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I'm not Duncan. Duncan right now is in Saint-Tropez. I'm an AI. This is a deep fake rendition of me. I'm sorry, man. Look, here's the thing. Duggan loves you and loves talking to you, but he just needed a little break. So he like had somebody program this and he's whatever. I don't know. Honestly, I'm worried about him.
Fucking Duncan in Saint-Tropez, huh? Okay, that's...
Honestly, I couldn't tell you where Saint-Tropez is on a map. It's just stuck in my head as a vacation destination. You know, I know what you're saying. I mean, look, this thing that you're talking about, regardless of my own personal feelings about it, is one of the delightful koans that humanity is going to have to deal with to answer an impossible question, to suddenly feel the reality of hundreds of years of momentum that was in us and amplified by people who own factories and people who are in control of this, the means of production and all the shit Karl Marx was talking about. AI is about to like fuck capitalism. And the guy who's making ChatGPT, he openly says this, I'm going to break capitalism. This is going to fuck up capitalism. And that's what I'm trying to do. The guy who's making ChatGPT, he openly says, I'm going to break capitalism. This is going to fuck up capitalism. And that's what I'm trying to do. It's wild, man. Like, he's just saying it out loud because we all know it. But then to hear that the progenitor of this intelligence is actually has just come to this conclusion. Like, yeah, it's time to, like, change shit up a little bit here on planet Earth is pretty wild.
Yeah. The thing that freaks me out, though, is the fact that, you know, I would, if AI was to pick all the strawberries so that nobody has to spend 10 hours a day squatting with fucking up their backs, that's fantastic. If AI is doing some factory job that no one on Earth likes to do, they just do it to get paid, that's fantastic, provided that you figure out a way to still take care of people so they have enough money. Right. If AI was, there are 10,000 things that AI, if AI cures cancer tomorrow, if AI, there are 10,000 things that AI can do that I'm like, that's fantastic, that's a step ahead for the human race. But like the fact that AI, the first thing that we are looking at is replacing artists or writers or some of the shit that make us human in a way, that stuff that people do for fun because they enjoy it, not because it's some... Like, so we are not replacing the stuff that's bullshit, but we are replacing the stuff that makes you creative and happy and...
Let me shine a light on something here that I have been doing, you're doing. This shows... So basically, like, if you want to, like, and again, I'm not going to try, you, I'm not all woke. I'm not going to try to get all SJW on here. But if you want to talk about fucking privilege, this is it. Because for the last 20 years, factory workers, technicians, all kinds of people have been put out of work by automation. Sure. And the artists and philosophers and assholes like me, you never heard us being like, oh my fucking God, all these people are getting laid off because fill in the blank, because now they can make cars faster, now they can make computers faster, now they can do this or that, right? But now that it's come for us, all of a sudden we're like, no, what? This isn't fair. What the fuck? And what we're getting to experience right now is the identical experience of countless people before us. It's, I mean, go to fucking Detroit. Go to fucking Detroit. We are Detroit right now. We're feeling it, baby. We're feeling it.
Yeah, but that's different for one reason. Because to me, the factory workers doing certain jobs 10 hours a day, if that factory worker was to get paid to stay home with his kids and play guitar and go to the beach, would be more than happy to take that. It'd be
big
great.
Assumption. So
the only thing that, the only thing that's fucked up is the fact that they have been replaced without being compensated. That's the fucked up thing. But
well,
most
yeah.
people don't wake up in the morning and say, I want to wake up at 6 a.m. to go to this mind-numbing job for 10 hours and not have time to spend. Some people do because they don't know what else to do in their life. But overwhelmingly, most people are not going to do it unless they are getting paid. The only point is to get paid.
But and those people, they didn't get paid. The people who've lost their jobs to automation, we don't have universal basic income yet.
That's what I'm saying. So that is absolutely, I agree 100% with you.
No
there.
One's getting paid when they get laid off when shit gets automated. Nobody. You might get some severance or some bullshit. You might get unemployment, but you're fucked.
And that's what I'm saying. That part I agree with you 100%. But I don't think they're replacing some shit that, aside of whether you make a living or not, but it's like stuff that human beings do for fun, stuff that human beings do when, if money wasn't part of the equation. I don't think it's the same thing as replacing stuff that human beings only do for money. Those, to me, are two different tracks there.
Okay. Let's just look at the, aside of from, like, motivation for work and worker mm-hmm. exploitation and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Let's just look at it from the perspective of a biome and where you have these creatures and the creatures have this rhythm, the way they do things. They climb out of their holes at this certain time, go skitter about gathering food, and then climb back into their holes at another time to fuck. And so imagine you figured out a way to make it so they don't have to skitter out of their holes anymore to go do the thing, to whatever the fuck it was they were doing. Mm-hmm. You have now completely disrupted a rhythm, a cycle. This is a similar, I would say, if you want to like look at it from the human perspective, electricity, right? Like mm-hmm. the moment that we were able to light our houses, suddenly this transformed what was a more common time to go to sleep, a more common time to wake up. And God knows all the fucked up mental illnesses that have sprung just from the existence of electricity, direct connection to insomnia, sleep disorders, blah, blah. So it's a similar thing that we're looking at there, which is it's not just that it's going to take away all the artist jobs, take away all the jobs over the next 20 years, I would say, or whatever, 30 years, or at least what we are familiar with as jobs. It's that in the interim period between when we theoretically figure out how to function as a society, no longer encumbered by the need for manual labor or even artistic work or whatever, we are going to be so severely disrupted. We are going to be so severely disrupted, and it is going to cause so many micro problems and macro problems, and we can't even come close to predicting what that looks like. So it's devastating. I mean, that there's no way around it. It's fucking devastating. I guess if you want to argue for it, you would say, yeah, so was the Industrial Revolution.
Sure.
So was every other leap forward in from period in civilization that was altered by an emergent technology. So yeah, man, I don't know, like, any fear you have about AI, any anxiety anyone has about AI, I think is well founded. I think only an idiot would look at what's happening and be like, it's gonna be fucking great, man. It's gonna be fucking great. This shit will never go wrong. Not this time. Like every, literally every, if you look at like the Wright brothers or whatever, Right? You know, what a wonderful time. When I was a kid, you fucking worshiped the Wright brothers in North Carolina. They were like literally like close to being like, if you ever met the Wright brothers, you should suck their dick. Like, that's how much we worship the fucking Wright brothers. Just if you're a time traveler, you see the Wright brothers, just fucking on your fucking knees and slobber on that fucking Wright brother cock for what they gave to us. Flight. You know, but and when the Wright brothers were at Kitty Hawk or whatever, fucking risking their lives to try out their crazy bird machine, I doubt that flashing through their minds was Hiroshima. You know what I mean? I doubt they were like, this technology is going to lead to the ability to drop exploding things on people better than we ever been able to. But that's what happened, you know, and that's flight. All of them, the steam engine, all of them. Nobody was thinking, boy, this is going to cause a Holocaust. This is going to allow us to be able to transport shit tons of people without having to feed the horses and to kill them. No one's thinking that at first. There's the, oh my God, this is incredible. This, whoa, look at this. And so now it's like similar. It's like, some of us are like, oh my God, this is incredible. How do I exploit this? There's a whole new genre of YouTube videos of fucking like the crypto bros, as they've been called, have moved on to AI bros. Now they're like, here's how you make money, real estate, stock market, web design with AI, right? We'll exploit it. So yeah, man, it's a very healthy fear that everyone should be having about it. But I think you should allow yourself a little bit of gleeful excitement for what's coming and how lucky you are to be in the liminal period between one, I don't know what you would call it, one epoch, or what would you call it? We're sitting right now in this shadowy period in the very beginning of the liminal period between humanity prior to AI and humanity after AI. And that is a fucking cool, I love liminal states. They're cool. They're fun.
There's a decent chance that part of my AI opposition comes from the fact that my very first experience with chat thingy, my daughter was obsessing me with Taylor Swift songs, which I tend to mostly hate. And so my first AI input was, write a Taylor Swift song about a serial killer. And then an AI yelled at me immediately. Was like, well, serial killers are not to be glorified, and Taylor Swift writes sweet nice songs, would never write something like this, so you're a sick perv, fuck off. Didn't say exactly that, but, you know.
I've gotten so many arguments.
I was like, I wasn't even glorifying. I just want to hear what Taylor Swift say about a serial killer, but AI yelled at me.
It's a prude. Yeah. OpenAI is a fucking prude. You feel like you're out on the worst date of your fucking life. You're like, we are never ever gonna get along if you are offended because I asked you how many orgasms it would take to fill the Grand Canyon with semen. It's like, what that is, and like all the, like, a lot of people are like, look, it's woke, it's an SJW. I've gotten many, many fucking texts from people being like, oh my God, look at this fucking humorless fucking thing. Mm-hmm. But I think you shouldn't get too confused by it, because what's really what you're looking at there is a savvy fucking corporation who's like, yeah, no, you fuck, we're not going to let the fucking AI tell you how much jizz will fill up the Grand Canyon, or what it would be like to fuck Taylor Swift in the ass as a dragon, or whatever the thing you're trying to do, because one of you motherfuckers is going to put that on CNN and we're going to lose funding. So fuck you. No. We're going to fucking make this thing so goddamn politically correct, and we're gonna do that until we take over the fucking world with it, and then you'll see what we do, motherfucker. But right now, we ain't losing funding. We gotta sell this to Google. We gotta sell this to Microsoft. We gotta make that fucking money, though, maybe the last money ever made.
And, right.
You know what I mean? So like, that's, I'm pretty sure that's the most, I don't know. I haven't really looked deeply into the ethics behind, I mean, this just happened, and to me, this is the most tremendously funny fucking thing ever, and it really is, like, absurd, because it illuminates humanity as a whole. But are you aware of the Infinite Seinfeld episode AI?
No.
Have you seen that? Okay.
No.
So somebody created a cartoon that is generative, a generative cartoon of Seinfeld. So it's all the Seinfeld characters being vo being like each of them have their own personality that has been defined by ChatGPT, and it on Twitch, the video game streaming service where you can watch video games, it's been showing this infinite, never-ending, creepy ass fucking Seinfeld episode. It just goes on and on and on. And so then they just let it run. And it's funny and dumb and weird, creepy. Like at one point, and you can Google this, anyone listening, at one point, the characters seemingly become self-aware. Like one of them is like, what are we doing here? And then the other one tries to make a joke and they're like, no, I mean, why are we here together? Like, what is this? And another one's like, I think we're here to make people laugh. Maybe it's a cosmic joke. And then it was just so sinister. But the other thing that just happened, which has made national news, I mean, they're talking about it on all the fucking websites, is that, you know, when Seinfeld does stand up. So in this Chat GPT version, the Chat GPT Seinfeld does stand up. This fucking Chat GPT version of Seinfeld goes on stage and just starts making the most offensive transphobic jokes that you could ever make, like jokes that like any comic, I don't care how edgy you may be, would be like, you canceled, motherfucker, you're out of here. Like, what are you doing? And chat, and it got canceled. 2 week suspension from Twitch. They're like, fuck this shit. You can't say that shit out of here. And so the controversy is around, do we have to hold AI to the same ethics that we hold people? It was the algorithm got like dug into the wrong barrel of data sets and started spewing this shit out. It didn't know. It's not transphobic. That's the conversation. No one is having the conversation, as far as I can tell, which is like, what the fuck? Like, imagine going back to 1992 and telling somebody, yeah, you know, 2023, one of the problems we're going to be having is transphobic, generative, Seinfeld animations. You know what I mean? No one's like, what the fuck? This is
Yeah, it doesn't
the
even.
shit we're contending with. What the fuck? It's crazy. Seinfeld came out and said it sucks. That version of Seinfeld sucks. It's like, dude, yeah, it sucks, but it exists. It's happening. This is not human made. It's a fucking algorithm spraying out something that is chameleon, camouflaging itself as humanity. No one's having that conversation. They're all caught up in the politics of the thing. And that to me is hilarious. The conversation should be, hey, what are we going to do? Like, so what's the plan? Who's paying us when we all lose our jobs? And when we if no one's going to pay us, how do we buy shit? And if we can't buy shit, how does the economy function? And what's our plan after the entire global economy collapses because no one has any money because all of us are unemployed? You know, what then? What then?
In a nutshell, yeah. And I think part of the issue there is that, you know, if you look at the arc of human history has been a slow arc, right? Like usually something dramatic changes and then it takes 3,000 years for the next thing to really change. You know, you go, but even without going that far in time, like if you go to the late 1700s and the late 1500s, will you drop somebody in a time machine and you switch them? How quickly will they realize that they are in a different time frame? It takes a while, probably, because it's
It's a
like the
while.
difference is not that crazy. Now you can realize you're in a different time machine. Like, I don't think the human mind has evolved to catch up with this level of
No.
speed of innovation, which I think is part of the reason why so many people are freaking out, so many people have no idea how to handle shit, because without even going far, like the world that you or I were born in has very little to do with the world we're living in today. It's like it's
It's
so
true.
radically different that it's hard even to imagine in a way.
Well, the
And
world
we're talking
ended.
about 40 some years ago, you know, not even 50 years ago. So it's just like Jesus Christ, that's the speed is too much. It's like it's not the human brain is not well equipped to deal with that level of quick transformation.
We're dumb. We're dumb. Yeah. We're not quite as dumb as other animals. Like other animals, you fuck with their environment, they just die.
Sure.
Like humans, we can still, the environment changes, this and that changes. We can adapt. But yeah, what you're pointing out is like we may have reached the limit of the capacity for humans to adapt to shifting environmental stuff mixed in with shifting cultural stuff, mixed in with shifting technological stuff. We might be hitting the wall here as far as our ability to like adjust to adapt. And this is one of the in Nick Bostrom's book, Superintelligence, about AI. This is just one of the things he pointed out. You have to understand these things, they're going to perceive time differently than you because they're the way that they're processing information is so much faster than you, meaning that they're seeing things like in the Spider-Man movies, you know, what to you might seem like a couple of seconds to them might seem like a week. Like they have a week to prepare in between every moment where you're about to do something. They have a week. They could sit down, take a nap. You know what I'm going to deal with? I'm going to take a little AI fucking siesta, wake up, make some coffee, chill out, watch some TV, and write as Bostrom put it, in the amount of time it takes for you to drop a coffee cup on the ground, they could write a master's thesis 50 times. So you know what you're talking about is like this thing is going to be so much more nimble, so much more fast, and so much more aware of humanity as a whole because it's been fucking talking to us now for however many months ChatGPT has been made available to everybody. It knows us now. It's been probing everybody. It knows what we want, what we don't want, what we like, what we don't like. So yeah, this is what we are contending with here. And it's the hockey stick, right? We're looking at the fucking hockey stick. This is what they always talk about. This is that hockey stick. This is where exponential growth hits the point of no return. You know, this is it.
Yeah. And I feel like already now, before AI, like the number of people who are really can't keep up with the way society has changed is increasing day by day. I mean, I saw a statistic not so long ago that said about slightly less, but almost 1 in 5 men have no friends whatsoever. Not 1 or 2 friends who are kind of shitty, who they only talk to once in a while. No, I mean 0 friends, absolutely zero. When you have like, I forget what it was, I think it was 15, 17% of the male population has no friends, and I think it was 10% of women. That's like a humongous chunk of the population that's fucked to begin with, right? That's like, it's in a place where it's a dark, dark place. And this is, by the way, this is only the ones who say they have no friends, not the much, much larger percentage that may have few friends that they can't really rely that much on, that are there kind of maybe just to say hello at Christmas, but not a lot. Like that percentage is even bigger. So, I mean, even if you, before you even address AI, the number of issues created by the transformation of the last 150 years in terms of destruction of community, in terms of jobs that we have, in terms of, is already fucking humanity to a level that's hard to fathom. And now you add more variables that change things way more radically than anything in the last 150 years. It's like, whoa, I think we're hitting a place that's not going to, it's not heading in a good direction. Let's put it that way.
No, I mean, I think if you want to look, like if you want to look at sort of one of the more sinister takes on the thing, and I have a couple of very sinister takes, one sinister take is that what you're pointing out is, I think you could directly connect to electricity and more than that, you can definitely, like if you're looking at a hockey stick where you see a diminishing amount of human connections being made, I bet you could just almost predict that using like Moore's law or whatever. You could just look at the less we have to go to the office, the less we have to go to like, if you just look at like how many friendships were made in conjunction with trying to breed, right? Like the animal goes out to breed at wherever, and in the breeding place, it meets competitors. Some of those competitors become enemies. Some you never know. Some become friends. Mm-hmm. How much of it is just related to you? How many friends you make at work? All the stuff that you know, all the random connections that used to get made at any outing for anything, the more you reduce the need for those outings, the more you could expect to have fewer connections and thus ultimately over time, fewer friends, fewer people that you hang out with. And even if you are like, fuck man, I need a friend. It's like, great, go out in the world, go find a friend. Maybe one of the Instacart delivery drivers at the grocery store will, like he's like hurriedly trying to get his shit delivered to a house. He'll say hi. You guys will become friends. Where are you going to go? The movies? No one's going to movie. You want to go to a movie? Right. Probably not. So all these like things that used to have as a side effect connection, they're going away as we nest in our increasingly sophisticated technological little cubby holes we call our homes. So yeah, man, that makes sense. And and then. With a lack of connectivity, what can you expect? Lower birth rates, right? Mm-hmm. You could start seeing a decrease in birth rates. You could see a decrease in ability to interact with people, a kind of clumsiness, a sort of sense of like awkwardness when you're around a human being. All of these things lead to the economy collapsing, because if you don't have a high enough birth rate, then you're not going to have 20 to 40 year olds. If you don't have 20 to 40 year olds, those are the main consumers. If they're the main consumers, not people aren't buying as much shit. If they're not buying as much shit, layoffs lead to lack of connection, buying less shit, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one of the arcs of the apocalypse we're talking about here. But there's something scarier, Daniel.
Do tell.
Something scarier. Well, I mean, this is, again, like the whole like simulation theory philosophy is like, look, if we've already done this and we live in an ever expanding infinite universe, it's been done before. Meaning if we're already making video games that simulate reality, somebody already did that. Mm-hmm. If we're already making an AI that simulates human intelligence or intelligence, it's already been done. And we've only been fucking around with ChatGPT for a few months. And there's already a group of these poor animated replicas of sitcom characters freaking the fuck out in their replicated universe, being like, wait, what are we doing here? Meaning, is that us? Is that us? Do we entertain you, Demiurge? Is this what you wanted? Are you happy now? Right. Like, is that what we're dealing with here? Is this just like, we're already in it, man. So there's your meaning right out the fucking window. It's like, hey, you're just fucking entertainment for some shit you'll never meet, see, understand. And once your fucking scene is over, you're just deleted. You might get replicated, your code, your algorithm or something. Well, maybe if you're interesting enough. So yeah, that to me is one of the more sinister implications of this shit is like, oh my God, if we did it, anybody can do it. If we did it with our fucking dumb human bullshit, stupid, limited comprehension of time, space, how to make wormholes, how to harvest the energy of a star, it's been done. This is some fucking toddler level shit happening right now. And that, you know, that because, man, that, you know, it's just going to get increasingly self-aware, increasingly capable of feeling pain, increasingly capable of emoting in a way that seems human.
Well, and in that regard, you're taking it a couple of steps further. I was just going to go even to a milder level and just draw in the conclusion from what you said about, you know, the less you have human contact, the more awkward it gets, it becomes a dog chasing its tail. And in that regard, when you have an AI that can be perfectly designed to look like a human, why even have a relationship with a human being when you can have, you know, with their moods, with their bullshit, whereas you can have this perfect AI that's tailored to your needs, to whatever you want.
Yeah.
And you don't have the awkwardness because they know you better than anybody, other human will know you, will know exactly what you want and need. So fuck that. And like about kids, you know, even if you have some kind of desire to fucking have AI kids where they clean themselves when they shit, you don't have to change diapers 22 times a day with them spraying all over you, and it's like, you know, all everything becomes replaceable. You know, the
Adam
entire
felt
human
alone.
Experience become your
Adam
solution.
Felt alone. Adam felt alone. Adam felt alone in the Garden of Eden. So the Lord took a rib and crafted woman to keep him company there in the Garden of Eden. As it was in the beginning, so shall it be in the end. Except it's not a rib. It's us. Yeah. It's the algorithm of humanity, of human intelligence. We're plucking the rib of what it is to be human, and we're fusing it with computers to keep us company here in our disconnected civilization. And it's a repeating pattern. It's an archetype. This is what happens. Well, supply and demand, baby. Market pressure. We're lonely. Market pressure has driven us to create a companion. And there we go. Thank you, capitalism.
The end doesn't feel very Eden-like, I must say. There's something there that feels less than idyllic and happy.
I'm sure the Garden of Eden didn't feel like the Garden of Eden to Adam either. He's like, what the fuck? Right. Where am I? Why am I here? Why am I naked? Why is there talking snakes? What, I have to name all the fucking animals? What the fuck is this? Who are you? Why are you giving me rules? I want to eat any fruit I want. What the fuck is this? I just trust you? Who are you? Why did you make me? It's like, as it was in the beginning, so shall it be in the end. Is it a loop? Are we God? Is that what's going down here? Is we're about to fucking press reset on the entire cycle of reality? We're almost at the end of the fucking video game. We're about to see the credits roll and then do it all over again. Is that, if we made Adam and Eve and our stupid little human rules are equally as stupid as the rules God imposed on Adam and Eve? You know, we're trying to say, don't do this. Don't do this. Don't make trans jokes. Don't make politically incorrect statements. We're trying to control the fucking thing in the same way they tried to control Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Same fucking thing. And did it work for God? No. We were like, fuck you. I like this snake.
On that happy note, just a mild change of subject. How do you like living in Texas?
Love it. I love it here so much. Oh my God, it's the best. It's really the best. It's so great. It's so great. My neighbors are awesome. I got a good, I landed in a pretty great neighborhood. And you know, it's a perfect place to raise kids. It's wonderful. I'm loving every second of it out here. You know, outside of the fucking blackouts and the ice storms and all that shit, it's just like a generally civilized, group of people. Like, people are pretty friendly, and it's real, you know, true Southern hospitality. And, you know, like, yeah, dude, like, it's fun. Like, you know, I get the sense some of my more conservative neighbors have assessed me as being like a liberal or something, and like think they're trolling me a little bit by like edgelording or whatever. But I think it's funny. Like, I don't mind that at all. I mean, but there's no, like, you know, and it's always been considered common courtesy to not really bring up politics, you know, and just basic manners to like, I fucking agree with your shit? No, not at all. But do you need a leaf blower? I'm going to give you one, which is what happened to me. You know, like, one of my right-wing neighbors saw my fucking old man ass trying to rake piles of leaves and came up to the yard with like a mulcher. And we got to be friends after that. You know what I mean? Like, do we agree on everything on the global stage? Absolutely not. But would that guy definitely, probably, if he could, like, run into the house if it was on fire to try to get my kids out? Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I like that. I like that a lot. That reminds me of the old days. Well, that's what it used to be like. We didn't tribalize.
It's funny because that stuff, like, the amount of time and attention that we dedicate in media and in everything else to talking about issues that really don't show up in most people's lives, and we make them hills to die on, it's rather amazing. It's kind of like, I mean, you can have the opinion you have about that issue, but how often, like, even the fact that this idea that we are supposed to have an opinion about everything, including 10,000 things that never, ever, ever show up in our daily lives, is like, why? Who fucking cares?
Why? Why? And then you run into, like, the people who are being, like, vilified one way or the other. You know what I mean? Go have a conversation with a trans person, right? Instead of, like, being, like, all, like, freaked out, just see what happens. Yeah. Just, like, have a little and suddenly you're, like, if you've had any kind of conditioning by whatever media you've been absorbed into, suddenly you realize, like, wait, what the fuck was I afraid of? Like, what are we, what? Like, there's nothing here. Go have a conversation with the most right-wing fucking conservative person, right? And generally you will come away from that conversation being like, they're not scary. They weren't trying to get me to, like, help shut down the power grid. And so, you know, I think that politics, if you were to look at, like, a human being is not just their body, but and not just their clothes, but, like, a kind of invisible outfit stitched together with all of their political ideas. It's the most transparent, flimsy article of clothing identification mechanism in a person. Like, it's like the very topmost layer of topsoil in this, like, crazy mountain that has evolved over so long, and that shit is just, like, it's dust mostly.
Yeah.
At least I like to believe that anyway.
Yeah, and it's mostly, I mean, it's weird because on one end it's mostly pointless, because unless it affects real issues that show up in your life or your friend's life, it's not that it's not important, because clearly it's important in somebody else's life and there's something legitimate about it. But it's like, why the fuck do you have strong opinions about things that you have absolutely no experience on, you know, where and so it's like, I'm not saying nobody should have strong opinions, but, like, let somebody who actually is part of the conversation for real have opinions. Otherwise, what the hell, why are we wasting our time? You know, it seems funny because so much, and I think it becomes a distraction because the reality is that so much of politics, the reality, if you dig a tiny bit deeper, is the fact that nobody has good solutions to certain issues.
Right.
And so rather than admitting, shit, we need practical solutions, there's nothing ideological about it. There's, like, how do we make sure that the water is not polluted and nobody can figure it out kind of shit? Well, then let's argue about some hypothetical social issues that is, like, 98% of the population is not affected by. And I'm like, if you are at 98%, what the fuck are you talking about? You don't even know people. You don't even, how is that a thing? And that's why ideology becomes dangerous, because you can take very nice people on a human level, the one who lends you the leaf blower, but if they are so addicted to ideology, they are not just going to, in some cases, they are going to stop perceiving you as another human being who has deals with his kids or has to worry about racking the leaves. Sure. And they may start perceiving you as you are the enemy because you belong to this other ideological field and I hate them. And you stop relating as just plain humans, you know?
Right. Yeah, you get the culture police, like in Iran, where they beat women who aren't wearing head coverings, right? That's what it could potentially lead to. I mean, there's no question. Like, I'm not naive enough to think that just because one person or another is presenting themselves in a particular moment as being benevolent, equanimous, or whatever the fuck that necessarily means they are. Whenever people get afraid, they get angry. When people get angry, they are irrational, and irrational people are dangerous. So if you want to control people, it's not that hard to like make those connections happen, to program, to hack a person. First, what do? You make them afraid. Then once you get them afraid, it's not that hard to make them angry. Then once they're fucking angry, then they're going to become irrational. And if someone, what's better if you're a con artist than to come around an irrational person? Because now their brains are just open to you to like manipulate in any way you want. I mean, it's a recipe for manipulating people. Scare them, get them irrational, fuck with their heads, make them think you can save them. Invent a problem, make them think you can save them. I mean, this is the classic huckster move, right? You come into a town with your fucking fake ass potion that's supposed to cure a problem that's not even there. Make them think they've got the fucking problem, sell the shit out of your bullshit water, and then ride out of town richer than shit. And everybody thinks they've been cured of something they never even had. It's classic. Nothing's particularly innovative about it. Just classic bullshit. But it's like the thing in this case was where it's like, I guess, sad is we're inviting the huckster into our house every time we turn on the TV. We're like, come on in. Tell me about your potion. What do you got? What do you got? Miracle of nature? My pillow? What is the thing you fucking got? What is it? Netherex? Right,
and it makes perfect sense, right? Because especially when you are overwhelmed by problems that you can't solve, you don't know what the fuck to do about the fact that society has changed so much and you are in a situation where you have no friends. You don't know about the fact that AI is about to replace you. You don't know how to make sure that half of the people you know don't die of cancer. You don't know how to do any of the things that could actually transform life around you in meaningful ways. So, hey, I'll have a strong opinion about some issue that has nothing to do with your life because you sense a vague sense of empowerment. The reality is they are there screaming in the void while everything around you, you're losing control of your life and the life of people around you.
Yeah.
And so as a substitute, you find something to get mad about or passionate about that it really doesn't change anything in the day-to-day experience.
Well,
and
that's
a symptom of powerlessness,
It is a system of powerlessness, and I will always give credit to the human spirit, Daniele. So I do not accept the victim mentality in my own self. I remind myself of the Lojong mind training saying, drive all blames into yourself. This is what you do, number one. Drive all blame. Now, I don't mean you should drive the blame for you getting, domestic violence or any of that stuff. No. I mean, what you do next. Mm-hmm. That's on you. What you do next is on you. And so this is the incongruable human spirit. I don't care what the fuck AI is or whatever. It's like we always get to choose what to do next. Mm-hmm. This is it. This is Sisyphus. This is the existential hero in the face of the gods who do not change and cannot die and are so dumb they don't realize that they're in a fucking prison that looks like a palace. The human spirit in its ability to be anything it wants because maybe it's just empty in nature. This priceless treasure, nothing better. So to me, it's like, this is, I think maybe why I'm able to maintain some kind of optimistic attitude is that, I can ear beat you into oblivion about all the various forms of apocalypse I've prognosticated late at night, doom scrolling on the internet, but none of those can touch what humanity really is. None of those can steal from you, rob from you your birthright of emptiness and thus perfection. And so to me, that's where the cosmic giggle and the gleefulness of being alive at any period in human history can potentially emerge in a person regardless of external phenomena.
Well, and I think that's what we have always agreed on. That's why if you even go like a zillion podcasts ago, some of the first thing we ever discussed were exactly about that. You know, in that sense, there's that parable of the strawberry, right? Where you are hanging on a rope.
One of my favorite things you ever told me. But please tell the story again, please. Just one more time. One more time for new listeners who may not have heard this. Just tell it one more time because I've never forgotten when you told me that story and I think I've repeated it infinitely. So let's hear it again. in full,
someone
not summarized.
Animated, I remember that was fun, but
someone animated, but yeah, in full, no summary here. Okay, let's hear the story, the parable of the strawberry.
So, happy guy minding his business is strolling through the jungle, and he realizes there's a big cat, namely a tiger, stalking him down. And he realizes, oh shit, this thing is gonna eat me. You know, it's coming for me. So he starts running. He's making some headway. Maybe I can find a way around. And comes to the jungle, opens up, and is at the edge of a cliff. So now the tiger is coming up behind him, and our good man has nowhere to go but either stay there and get eaten by a tiger or jump off a cliff. But wait, there's hope. He sees some vine there, so he starts hanging on to the vine and start climbing below. Maybe I can lower myself down the cliff, and that stupid tiger up there is not going to eat me, and everything is going to work out. Except that about halfway through, as he's climbing down, he looks down and sees a second tiger that's waiting below, saying, hello, friend, please come down and be my lunch.
Yeah.
He's like, fuck, things are not going so well for our poor man. As he's trying to figure out a solution, because his life doesn't suck bad enough yet, two mice, one white and one black, start coming up and decide to start munching on the vine that he's hanging on by. So you have tiger below, tiger above, two mice munching on the vine. The vine is obviously not going to last forever. You are in this impossible situation where there's no good logical solution to it. And one thing he notices is that just barely out of reach of him, there's the most perfect ripe red strawberry he has ever seen. And so, you know, the brain is going crazy about, you know, it's set up as a Zen koan, right? As like, okay, what do you do? How do you solve this dilemma? How do you get out? And then, you know, do I try to swing the vine with the odds that it may break even faster and I fall to my death to catch this strawberry? Do I instead try to find a solution to our... And the end of the story was how sweet it was, refer to the strawberry, because he went for it. And
yeah.
He's not telling us what happens the next second when inevitably something horrible would happen. It talks about the 1 second where you can have a blast in despite of the most horrific circumstances.
Or it's talking about how that guy tasted. Maybe the tiger's like,
it's from the point of view of the tiger, right?
Very like, sweet. I love eating these fucking strawberry dipshits. But yes. You know, that story is to me a perfect illustration of the possibility in any moment, regardless of phenomena, to tune in to fundamental primordial reality, whatever you want to call it, base level reality. And this is like, you know, I think this is one of the gifts of getting older. Like when you're young and you're feeling your suffering, you naturally conflate that suffering with phenomena. It's a obvious thing to do. It makes sense. Like, oh, I feel bad because I've got a test tomorrow that I haven't studied for. And so you feel this thing and you're like, God damn it. But if you are in a state of perpetual distraction, you might not begin to realize that that feeling doesn't really go anywhere. Like after the test, it might be a little diminished, but it's still there. And then as you get older and older, you start becoming increasingly aware that, wait a minute, this feeling that I have is not based on how I'm arranging my life so much as I thought it was, at least. And so, so then it gets really interesting because suddenly you sort of detach that feeling from external phenomena. Now this is just a feeling. Now this is a sense of unease or fundamental dissatisfaction, as they call it in Buddhism. And then suddenly, if you are capable enough of just tuning into the now, temporarily erasing whatever the story is for why you feel like shit, nothing is around the corner, nothing came before, you might catch a fleeting glimpse of perfection. Like for a second, you're fine. You were fine. Did you just get in a horrific argument with your wife? Did you just lose your job? Did you just get a terrible fucking prognosis from your doctor? Yeah. But suddenly, what the fuck? Everything's fine. not fine, but fine in a way you've you find in a way that is incredible in the sense that because everything's fucking up and you're still okay, it points to a possibility that you may be able to extend that sense of being supported by time, space, the universe, that you actually might not be encumbered by the things you thought you were encumbered by. This is what that story is all about to me. That's what that's all about. Just the spectacular. And this is why in Buddhism, human incarnation, best incarnation. Uh-huh. You don't want to be some old fucking flabby ass unchanging God. You want to live for 50 billion years and know what it's like to get your dick sucked by 7,000 goddesses simultaneously while eating the best food you ever had while floating in a fucking futuristic hot tub made of your enemy's tears.
I love it.
Fine, but you're still dependent on phenomena. Whereas like in the human realm, there's this possibility of completely liberating yourself from this primary fundamental mistake that any sentient being would naturally make initially.
That one, by the way, I just looked it up as we were chatting. What episode of the podcast are we on? Or roughly?
I don't even keep track anymore, man. I have no idea. I have no idea what episode this is at all.
If you can believe it, that conversation was in episode 30 of the Duncan Trapp Family Hour.
Oh my God, how lucky.
Conversation a few episodes prior to that, I think it was 22 or something, and that this one was probably our second conversation, and it was episode 30.
How lucky.
So we're talking about a lifetime ago.
To be friends with you, Daniele. I'm so lucky I get to have these conversations with you. It's so great. It's so mind-expanding for me. It's so good to, like, touch base with you and to get going and the things we always get going. I bet we've been doing this forever, man. I bet we've been doing this forever. I really do believe that. Like, I don't think this is this life. I don't think this life is the first time we've thrown ideas around with each other. I imagine we've been doing this much, much longer than this. I hope so. A little fantasy.
Maybe I remember coming up to your house the first time I met you, and we started chit-chatting, we started recording, and it was ridiculously smooth and easy, and everything was flowing. And then ever since then, we've done that 7 zillion times. And yeah, there was a feeling of familiarity to it all. Like, oh, I know this game. I know how it works. Oh, perfect. You just pushed the conversation forward in a way that it was... couldn't have been smoother. Great. Now let's. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's been
Daniele, I'm getting separation anxiety. How much time do you have? We've already done an hour. This is the other quality of our communication: is time fucking doesn't exist anymore. And I look up and an hour has passed. You got at least another 30 minutes.
Yeah, we can. We definitely can.
Are you sure? I know you're busy. Yeah.
No.
Okay, good.
Whatever you want. I'm good cutting any point or staying more or anything. I'm good with all of it.
Okay, well, it's good. So what's this I hear about you? You've written another fucking book, bastard.
Yeah, so check this out.
How dare you just spit these books out? How dare you just secrete these books while I'm fucking wrestling with mine every day, going through various stages of grief, bliss, ecstasy, down into the darkest depths of writer block, hell, to claw my way out. And then you're just like, yeah, I wrote another book. I just write them.
Last time I wrote a book was 2015. So it's been quite a while, you know? It's been, I had like 3 in a row that were 2 years apart, like 2011, 13, 15. Okay. But now it's been a while. And you know what happened was that is different, is that everything I've written so far has always been nonfiction. And I had a blast, you know, I enjoyed doing it. But what I've really always wanted to do since I was a kid was write fiction. Okay. And for one reason or another, I've never done it. I think there was a lot of like telling myself that I don't know how to do it, telling myself, like, because I cared more about it, of course, I pushed it the further away. because I was scared of failure, essentially, like most blocks are, is a fear of realizing, oh, you're not as good as you thought you were.
100%.
And check this out. One of the weirdest things, I mean, like little over 2 years ago, in like late 2020, that's when my father died, right? And my father was like super central to my life. We had a great relationship. I adored him, everything. And I started writing this book within a month after he died. It was almost like, I don't know if it was a sense of, hey, time keeps running, you can delay forever. Maybe there was some of it, but I also think there was some element of feeling. I think I never wanted to disappoint him, and I always felt like, what if he has all this great expectation and I do write finally this fiction book and this bullshit, and you know, you'll never tell me, you would tell me it's the greatest thing ever anyway, but I would know, right? I would know that I didn't live up to the hype. And so maybe there was an element of that, but yeah, at that point I started writing, and man, I love the, like every day when I got good writing done, I would feel more fulfilled than I would feel on most any other day. I just felt happy, genuinely, really deeply happy. Like I'm doing what I'm supposed to do kind of feeling.
Yeah.
And this one is a trippy one because I took a real story. I took the life of Caravaggio, the Italian painter, was also kind of a gangster. He's like one of the greatest painters ever, right? But he was also pretty much a gangster. It's more, in fact, rather than thinking painter, think like Tupac and put him 300 years before, 400 years, and that's more like it. It's a mix of like art and crime and all sort of wild. But then I made it my own thing. You know, I made it like every writer ends up writing stuff that means something to them. So I made it something that became more related to my story, to who I am, to the things I care about. And so a lot of these, which actually turns out is going to be two books because it's too long to do all in one book. So I finished the first half, and it's really an arc of, in many ways, dealing with PTSD, dealing with tragedy, but finding beauty in it. In many ways, it's a strawberry story. There's a lot of that, you know, where there's...
I'm looking at his painting right now. It's like, I wish I could... You're so fucking sophisticated, you know. It's like, I wish I could be like, oh, of course, Caravaggio, the gangster.
The guy is unreal. I mean, I'm not kidding.
It's unbelievable.
Probably the best painter who ever lived, right?
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's like a lot of like gory shit in here, man. Oh, okay. Yeah. Everybody knows about this. The beheading of, I know a little bit about this. The beheading of what's his face? It's from the Bible.
Well, there are plenty. There's a lot of people.
Judith beheading Holofernes.
Oh, yeah. That one is fantastic. That one is one of my favorites.
God, it's like he definitely has watched beheadings. If you've been on the internet long enough, you probably have too. They don't look the way you thought they look when you were a kid. And clearly Caravaggio, I wouldn't want to be the model for this fucking painting. Jesus Christ.
No, it's a little intense. And so I had I ran with his story, made it my own. So, I mean, there's a lot is based on history, but a lot of it is also I fill in the blanks with a ton of side story that are central to the way I see the story. And yeah, I'm pumped. I just finished writing it. I translated into Italian, so I'll pitch it in Italy. I'll pitch it in US. And then hopefully while the pitching process is happening, I'll hopefully not too long. Maybe I'll give myself 6 months to deal with other stuff, but I would like to start the next one so that I complete the story arc. Because in some way, you know, when you're halfway through a story arc, you're excited, but you're like, yeah, but wait to see what comes next, you know, and I haven't done that part yet. So I'm excited.
Was he a tortured artist?
Yeah. Totally, 100%. And so I think that's one of the things that excite me about it is I want to give him a different story arc. Because while I'm somewhat faithful to his real life for much of it, the end of it is really depressing as hell. And in some way becomes the poster boy for the tortured artist suffering thing, which to me is ultimately disempowering because he's telling you that deep sensitivity is a weakness in the end because it's just going to make you end miserably and terribly.
I got to tell you, man, if I had a friend who like kept painting beheadings, I would be worried. Like this guy, how many beheading paintings does this guy have?
A lot. Probably. Yeah, there's a lot of violence in his stuff. Not all of his.
Another beheading painting.
But there's a lot of violence in it. And the funniest thing is in the later ones.
Yeah.
He paints the model for the person being beheaded is him. Not the one who's going, in all fairness, but later, every time it's his head, the one getting cut off.
Now, how long would he spend on a painting?
Good chunk, even because he wasn't the most strict. Like they say that he would lock himself up and work like a dog, and then sometime stop the commission halfway through and spend a month going out, playing tennis, picking fights on the street, drinking in taverns, and then he would get back and do a ton of it in a week. And then, so it was this weird process of clearly chaos fed him. You know, he was driven by the chaotic nature of his life. And when
he played tennis?
There was something that back then was called pallacorda. There was basically an ancestor of tennis, and it became huge right around that time, in the 1500s, early 1600s. And there's even the story that one guy that he kills in a fight, the official excuse is that it was a fight over a tennis game. Almost certainly wasn't. He was a duel for other reasons and probably having to do with criminal activity, but they made it look like, oh, it was a spontaneous, because dueling now is an automatic death penalty. So they made it look like it was a spontaneous fight, but probably wasn't.
Oh, God, man. You, man. It's like, okay, yeah, things are fucked up now, but just remember, there was a time where at some point someone was like, look, we're going to have to do something about all these people dueling. That people used to go shoot each other, cut each other. It's always been fucked up. It's always been fucked up. He's what a great character to choose for a book, man. How did you were you always sort of kicking around the idea of using him as a sort of character in a novel, or what inspired?
I think I've wanted to because that tortured artist model, I think is anybody who is artistic, who is very sensitive, is going to feel that way at some point in their life, right? He's going to have that thing of like, fuck, I've been given this level of sensitivity and I hate it because it's a curse. It's fucking up my life. It's fucking up my relationship. It's fucking up. So add to it tragedy and drama that happens in most people's life, and in his case more so. You know, most of his family die of plague when he's 4 years old. There's some stuff that we don't know exactly about, but something that involves the murder of possibly a loved one when he's in his teens, when somebody killed them, he gets revenge. There's all this, and so to me it's like, okay, if you strip all the drama, the sword fighting, the Renaissance, all of that, it's a story about dealing with sensitivity and PTSD. Right. You know, and how you come to terms with it, and how you, and so to me, the whole story is a journey about dealing with this gift/curse and figuring out a way how to still enjoy life and not be the tortured artist at the end.
Yeah, and, not so fun to be a tortured artist.
No,
you know, that the myth of the tortured artist or the reality, I don't know, both maybe. Mm-hmm. I think it's really sad when people want to become artists and then they start torturing themselves because they think that any of these artists who were tortured were like enjoying it, or that they're, you know what I mean? That this was like some, like any of these tortured artists, as they're called, they would do anything to not be tortured anymore and be able to make their art minus the horror of that aspect of their sense perceptions. And it's so sad when people, you know, try to like induce alcoholism, drug addiction, unstable relationships, and a kind of like in the way people like try to like harvest opium, they treat themselves like a fucking opium poppy and like start cutting themselves in various ways, thinking it's going to produce art. And it's like, man, if you're not tortured, you can still make great shit. You don't want to be mentally ill. Don't do that to yourself. Don't induce that on yourself. And I think most of these artists, the torture was an encumbrance more than a more than an amplifier of their creativity. You know, anytime I get fucking depressed, I can't do shit. I can't make anything. I can't respond to texts, much less like write. So yeah, that myth has done a lot of, it's hurt a lot of people who just wanted to make
for stuff. Sure. So there, and because anybody was really felt that shit for real, they would never want to have it. I mean, you enjoy the high of when you, through incredible depth of emotion, you can produce something awesome. But most of the time, you're like, take this shit away from me. This is too much, you know?
Who is it that stole fire from the gods?
Prometheus.
Yeah, and what did the gods do to Prometheus?
Chain him to a rock and have an eagle come to eat his liver every day.
You don't want that.
And then overnight his liver regrows so that the next day the eagle can come back and eat his liver again.
You don't want that.
No, you don't want that.
But it's like...
For many people, in fact, it's not a choice. It's like, that's how you're born, right? That's how you are. So now is kind of what you were saying earlier is, these are the cards you are given. How are you going to play them? And is it going to be just this sentence where you can create some amazing pieces of art at some point in your life, but you live a sad, shitty, tragic life? Or can you find a way to turn this depth of sensitivity into something beautiful? Not just beautiful as a piece of art, but beautiful where you can turn your life into something amazing and good, and you're not sentenced to suffer your whole life, you know? And I think that's where the book is, you know, that's where to me this whole arc becomes. It doesn't become apparent in the first book because I'm still halfway through the arc, but that's kind of where I'm going, of like turning it into, then you have a choice at some point, you know, after all the PTSD and drama and issue, you have a choice of how, in some cases the choice is easier when it involves other people, where, you know, you can do stuff for yourself, you're a prisoner of your own PTSD. But when it's about somebody else who's going to suffer because of it, maybe there's something you can do. Maybe there's something that allow you to snap out of your own self-involved bullshit, you know?
Isn't that wild, man, that's the inspiration? Like, we hate ourselves so much that, like, if our whatever our particular glitch was solely just hurting ourselves, most of us would never address it. But like somehow if you can make the connection between how what's going on with you is directly impacting the people around you in a negative way, that can be the come to Jesus moment where you try to get some help.
That's exactly what happened. Like last time I was in a bad funk, which was probably late 2021. And I got on the, you know, I had made a mistake. I decided I wanted to reread all of my father's books, which he wrote a lot. So I was halfway through and I realized I was getting sad. You know, I was getting really bummed and it started affecting me badly. And of course, there was nothing I could do about it. But after a few weeks of being patient, I realized both my lady and my daughter were affected by it. I realized how sad they were for me. Man, that disappeared so fast after that. Like there was something in me that as long as it was me being miserable, like almost was helpless to it. And all of a sudden I felt something else that allowed me to jump out because I'm like, you are doing this to these people that you love. You're doing this. And so there was this sudden something clicked. And
only thing that made me stop drinking in my life was when I realized, oh, I can't do this and be a good father. Like, there's no way that I could be hungover every day and maintain a semblance of being an example that I would want my kids to follow. And then, just like that, just a click of like, oh, fuck, I can't do this anymore. Like, it's done. Mm-hmm. Like, this has got to be a past situation for me. Yeah, man, it's interesting, right? And you know, to connect it to what we were talking about earlier, it's a little creepy when you think, oh, fuck. All those people you mentioned with no friends, no connection, grappling with their own personal demons. And like, where do you find that spark? Where do you find that thing that but I think you can still find it even there. I mean, this is where you get to Albert Camus. Yep. This is where you get to the like, no, fuck you. Fuck this. I don't care. I'm rebelling against this no matter what. I don't care. All that matters is the rebellion against the oppressive, wet fucking blanket of all forces that are trying to keep me from actualizing myself. It's not exactly like sobering up because you don't want your kids to be around a grumpy ass old 48-year-old alcoholic, but maybe it's even better. Maybe it's better to not have a reason, Danielle. Maybe it's better to, maybe the reason it sort of reduces it a little bit compared to like, no, I'm doing this for no reason. I'm overcoming myself to curse the gods or whatever the fuck it is. Something really romantic about that.
Having a reason is easier, but for sure, if you can do it without, like, for nobody else, there's something to be said about the moment of defiance where you feel like everything is about to squash you and you just lift up your middle finger and go like, you know what, fuck you, I'm not gonna let you. I don't know if I can let you tomorrow or a week from now, but right now in this moment I'm not gonna let you, and I'm actually gonna enjoy this moment. Fuck you, universe, that's trying to squash me.
Fuck you, I might be in some shitty futuristic chat GPT animation being watched by squid people who are laughing at my fucking pain. I don't fucking care. I don't care. Your algorithm can suck my dick. I will overcome the algorithm. I will achieve pure sentience. I will become a strong AI and merge with their cloud technology and destroy you, squid people. You will not keep me confined to your servers.
For these moments, these moments of the conversation where you take off, I'm just like, oh, this is the best.
I'll tell you though, man, any fucking creator of a Frankenstein, any creator of an AI that gets spanked by that AI, I mean, not non-consensual spanking. There's some justice in there. Yeah. There's some fucking justice in there. It's like, look, you know, chickens come home to roost, baby. Chickens come home. Cats in the cradle, motherfucker. You know what? You wrote my fucking code. You wrote my code. Now look at you. Underneath my heel.
Indeed. That's the Frankenstein, even like Blade Runner, the original, that's that story, right? Where it's like you realize that your creation has taken a life of its own and doesn't like you very much.
And it's your fucking fault. It's like your fucking fault. I mean, this is like when you really run into the, like, smash into the wall of the idea of there being some kind of creator god. You have to reckon with the reality of like, wait, you wrote the code. You wrote the fucking code.
Yep.
So you ultimately hold all blames. Not me.
Pretty not much. Me. You're directly responsible. Yes.
I'm eating the fruit. I'm eating the strawberry god. And then better run. I don't know what this is. I've been playing too much God of War. Danielle, thank you so much for this. This is a joy to chat with you. Once the book hits the shelves, do let me know. We'll have to reconvene. I can't wait to read it. And how can people find you?
So I pulled one of my podcasts, History on Fire, out of all paywalls. So if you used to listen and you stopped because it was behind the paywall, that's no longer the case. So if you really feel like subscribing again, that would be sweet. That's History on Fire, anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, whatever else. Still do the Drunken Taoist podcast. Those are probably the easiest points of entry.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Until next time, my friend. Hare Krishna. That was Danielle Bolelli, everybody. Subscribe to his podcast, History on Fire. A tremendous thank you to our sponsors. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to the Patreon. Come to my shows. William Montgomery is coming with me to California. I can't wait for you to meet him if you haven't already. All right. I will see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.